Notable.
Hello again. Welcome to Notable with me, Elizabeth Holker.
And me, Stu McConey, and producer Jeff. And maybe Terry, although he's sleeping at the moment in Elizabeth's flat.
He's being good for a change.
He is. Stories from the world of music that we bring to the table. We share them with one another. We share them with you. Curious, fascinating, interesting little stories from the kind of history and culture of music.
All kinds of music.
That's right. So today,
in
a little while, I'm going to be talking about, well, we are going to be talking about Gesualdo, Carlo Gesualdo, a composer literally hundreds of years ahead of his time, who is also very famous for the terrible crime he committed. His music and his life were both shocking.
And we're starting with death punk.
We're going to talk about something phenomenal, aren't we? You found out about this called Turbojugend. Let me tell you quickly the starting points. I was walking through the streets of Wigan the other day, where I'm from.
Which is where all good music stories
start. That's right. And a lad walked past me, young man walked past me in the street, and he had a jacket on, a very elaborately festooned jacket and design jacket. And it said, Turbojugend, Wigan. And it had a sailor's cap on, and he had lots of other badges on it. And I thought, that's an interesting word, Turbojugend. That's something youth, turbo youth. So as I'm walking behind him, I Googled it on my phone and uncovered this amazing story about a Norwegian band called Turbo Negro and their passionately devoted global army of fans, Turbojugend. So you've been looking into it a bit.
I have, yeah. So Turbo Negro, a Norwegian rock band,
yeah,
they had two phases in their careers, didn't they? They started out in 1989, and that phase ran till 1998. Then their lead singer was institutionalised on tour while they were in Italy, actually. Went off, I think he ran a whale sanctuary for a little while. Became a Scientologist.
That's right.
And now he's very much settled as a family man.
Yeah.
They came back with a different British singer, actually, and had this second phase, which started in 2002.
Which continues,
And their style is kind of, I've been listening today.
Yeah.
It's sort of, they're influenced by Black Flag, aren't they, and the hardcore scene.
There's a
scene
lot of things going on. It's a bit glam,
rock
it's
and
a bit
roll.
Punk, it's
it
a
is.
Bit rock and roll.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not,
yeah. I was actually having quite a lovely time listening. Well, I enjoyed some of
it. They keep getting classed as death punk, but as the Turbojugend, who we'll come on to in a minute, will say, there only appears to be one band who played death punk, and it's Turbo
and it's
Negro.
So it's just this wild kind of mix of styles.
But with no offence to them, I find the far more interesting thing than the band or their music is this following they've got.
It is, yeah.
Turbojugend, Turbo Youth, yeah. I looked this up and I soon began to realise that there are branches of Turbojugend literally all over the world.
23,000 different branches. It's incredible, isn't it? And that because they're not actually that massive in terms of record sales or the size of their shows. They'll play like a 3,000 show in LA, maybe.
That's right.
I think the original lead singer is worth about $1 million. So it's not, we're not talking like huge. We're not talking like Depeche Mode
or
band
nothing
that I thought
like that.
Of who had this kind of like that kind of dedication and commitment from fans.
There's a couple of little documentaries about them on YouTube about the phenomenon of Turbojugend. And the fans in that actually say, one of the fans says, the five insignificant guys from Oslo, he basically says the music's not really what it's about anymore. Almost like
it's
outgrown the band. It's about the community who are all over the world.
I can imagine because they were still going so well. It was like the early 90s, wasn't it? And this was the days of chat rooms. Because
this is a really good point.
I remember we used to sit in IT, as it was then. I mean, it was basically an hour playing on Paint Shop. Or eventually, when it started, chatting to the person next to you. So we'd be sitting in the same room, talking to each other on the Green Day forum.
This is a really good point.
And that was
considered.
Yeah,
so
that
it's
was
really
a thing.
The growth of the internet and chat rooms as well.
Yeah, because how else? That was the first thing I thought, because you see these fans and they're, like you say, spread out all over the world. There's thousands of them. How did they find each other?
Yeah.
And it must have been through chat rooms.
Got to have been.
What's quite nice about it is, I think that they are kind of a unique band, so they would attract these a unique following or a particular kind of person. I mean, Because their style, I know the hardcore scene is associated with all different kinds of things, isn't it? And eventually skinheads became kind of associated with racism and homophobia. Mm. Actually, originally, they were very inclusive, weren't they? And again, and anti-racist, were, yeah. Well, straight-edged
the original
sometimes. Skin,
the original British skinheads were very into Jamaican music.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Turbo Negro kind of play up to this because they dress a little bit like village people.
They do. They're called sailors.
They wear
little sailors' hats.
Yeah.
And the logo on the back of the... It's called a cutter. They wear a thing called a cutter, the fans, which is basically like a Hell's Angel has their jacket, but Turbo Jugend are nothing like Hell's Angels. They make fun of that themselves, saying we're nothing like Hell's Angels. But they wear this thing called a cutter, which is a jacket designed...
It's denim, isn't it?
It's denim, and it's got the little sailor's hat on the back. I think the reason for that is, in the beginning...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
They modelled themselves on the Kiss Army, who are Kiss's fans, and they started off as the Turbo Negro Navy. So there's a lot of sailor imagery going on in it, but now they're called Turbo Jugend. And that's a very good point.
Yeah.
Turbo Jugend is a play on Hitler Jugend, except completely different in that the first rule of, if you look up their rules online, the first rule is we will not tolerate racism.
Et cetera. Which the band are very much about as well. They wanted to kind of upend those perceptions about the hardcore scene or the death punk, you know, that kind of world.
Yeah. They're funny. It's all very tongue-in-cheek, which is what I like about it.
Yeah, it is.
And even the fans don't seem to pretend that they're incredibly passionate about it, but know that it's also fun. Because what struck me about Sky Saw and Wigan, they look at first glance quite, I don't know if threatening's the word.
They look like Pat Phoenix with a moustache.
Oh, you're talking about the band now, followers? No, I was thinking of the followers, because it's got this Turbo Jugend and everything about it looks like it could be. It looks a bit militaristic, a bit Hell's Angels-y, and so it's interesting that the thing is actually much more funny and light-hearted than that. But I think the really brilliant thing about it, these 20,000 chapters all over the world... You give yourself a new name.
Chapters,
you give yourself a warrior name.
Yeah.
When you join, and so you put that on your coat. So if you watch this documentary that I watched, you'll come across people called things like Dolly Suicide, and Angie Apocalypse. Even the names are quite like that. One of the names, one of the most hilarious ones, is completely unrepeatable. And the thing is, the idea is, I love.
Because there is that camper. It's a campery, isn't it?
Yeah. The thing I love about it is
Turbo Jugend's name?
Burt Dangerous. But I find it very attractive that if you're in Turbo Jugend, you can, if you're going to go and visit Cape Town or Gothenburg or whatever, you can go on, and they do. They say, hey, can I hook up with Turbo Jugend in the city? And basically, you've got friends all over the world.
Again, a social media thing. Because they find each other on Facebook, don't they?
They do.
And Instagram.
And they have a massive festival, 2 days every year.
They do.
Is it July the 27th?
Yes.
Which is one of the band's birthday, I think.
Okay.
And they have a festival in the St. Pauli district of Hamburg, which, if you know anything about football and stuff, is the super hipster right-on football club of Germany. And so it makes sense that they'd have their party there in St. Pauli.
Lots of girls in
Lots
that documentary
in
as well,
Lots
which is quite nice
Turbo,
to see.
Yes, yeah,
it's very non-threatening.
Yeah. And I looked up, because I looked at this thing all over the world, and I found there are 15 members of the Wigan chapter, of which I saw one. And I want to say hello, if he's listening, to Sergeant Snow, because I've looked online and I think the guy I saw, there's a little video of him in a pub in Wigan, and I think the guy I saw was Sergeant Snow, as is his warrior name. So they seem really lovely people, and their commitment to this kind of quite fun, silly thing, I think is really heartening. There's so much kind of division in the world, without getting heavy about it, that it's quite nice to see people who are making a global family devoted to having fun, you know, yeah.
Pat Terrier. I'll be.
Pat Terrier. That's going to be your Turbo Jugend name.
Yeah.
Great.
Does that work?
Yeah, I think it works perfectly. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think these are people who are sort of outsiders at school and then they find their tribe online, and there are other people in small towns like Wigan, but in maybe, I don't know, northern Finland or something, and they're also a bit outsiders, at, you know, a bit kind of...
I think there's an element of outsider in it, of people who want to find like-minded people out, and maybe they're not.
Yeah.
You know, they seem very normal, fun-loving people, but maybe they've always been that kid at school who didn't want to go along with the herd. I guess it's a bit like goth.
Yeah, it is like
goth. It's a bit like goth, maybe, that very strong subculture that's slightly outsidery, but also not as dark as people make it out to be.
The skater culture is a bit like that, because a lot of people carry skateboards around who can't skate.
Yeah.
But the way they dress, maybe the music they listen to, hanging around skate parks, it's all part of a kind of wider
subculture. And certainly that kind of progressive attitude as well, anti-racist and quite leftish politics, liberal politics, the skater community had, didn't they, as well? So yeah, I think there's some of that.
Mm.
In one of the documentaries on Land, there are two great Aussies, two Aussie lads who were talking about it. And one of them says, I wear my Turbo-Jugend cooter every other day when I'm not at work.
Basically, when he's not at work.
So you get, and he says, this is the real me. This is my second skin.
It is escapism, I suppose, that, isn't it? You can enter a world,
I suppose. Oh, it's a world. The other Aussie in it, who's the one with the unrepeatable name, if you watch this online, he's a big guy, bulky guy, big long, you know, a long hair and a big beard. And he says, this is the most important thing in my life. And then he says, it's a bit sad really, isn't it? He said, but this is the most important thing in my life. And he says, I'm going to start crying. And it's a really touching moment. And the thing he says, I'm going to start crying. And you realise, this means so much to this guy.
It's his family.
It's his family, yeah. And it's charming. From the outside, it doesn't look charming at all. Death punk, people throwing lager at each other. But it's really a heartwarming story.
Yeah, but you can imagine if you are like the death punk kid at school and then you realise there are like thousands of other death punk kids out there.
I'm going to join. I'm going to join.
Yeah. I'm going to set up a Northern Quarter branch of me and Terry.
You and Terry?
Yeah.
Turbo Jugend NQ.
We need to get a Turbo Jugend name for Terry.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Have you got a notable exception for us, Stuart?
Yeah, this is where we look at a one-off, a unique fact, and, it's tied in with death punk, because it's something to do with punk. The Sex Pistols, there's only one album. If you don't count compilations and stuff like that.
Of course.
It's interesting to think of a band with more influence ever who've only made one album. I doubt if there is there? Then never mind the bollocks, is the Sex Pistols. That's their only proper studio album.
Can't think of any.
I think that's probably the most influential one-album band ever. Although some of the other people who only made one album... Derek and the Dominoes, Lauryn Hill, The Modern Lovers, Jeff Buckley.
Of course, Jeff Buckley's a big one.
Yeah, but I doubt if anybody could claim to have had a career.
Did he not make two? He didn't finish the second one?
No, My Sweetheart the Drunk is a sort of hodgepodge thing, isn't it? No, the most influential one-album-only band ever has got to be the Sex Pistols. Elizabeth. Are you familiar with Carlo Gesualdo or Gesualdo?
I am. Roughly.
Roughly.
Mm.
I've loved his music for quite a while now.
Madrigals.
He's best known for his collection of madrigals. But in fact, really, I say that, he's best known, I guess, for the fact that the circumstances of his life are kind of a shocking as
influential
as the music.
As his music is influential.
His music is incredibly shocking. It was so far ahead of its time, but his life was shocking as well.
Well, this is what people say, isn't it? Like, was it his music that made him famous, or was it his this event that I'm sure you're going to tell us about that made his music famous, or, you know, would he? Because we probably wouldn't still be talking about him just for that one thing that he did.
No.
Had his music not also been very special.
Alex Ross, the New Yorker music critic who wrote several brilliant books, The Rest Is Noise, about classical music, said, "If Gesualdo had not committed such shocking acts, we might not pay such close attention to his music. But if he had not written such shocking music, we would not care so much about his deeds.
Okay.
Many bloodier crimes have been forgotten. It's the nexus of high art and foul play that catches our fancy."
What a nexus that is.
What a nexus it is. Carlos Gesualdo de Venosa, who was the Prince of Venosa, he was a nobleman, very musically talented. We're talking sort of 1560s to 1613 he died.
So it's like 400 years ago.
400 years ago. Late Renaissance, would that be? Yeah. Forgive me, historians, if that's completely wrong.
It's Renaissance.
It is. Musically talented, like a lot of people in his time. You know, he was educated. He played the harpsichord, played other things. But the music he wrote as a young man is pretty undistinguished, really. It's, you know, it's, there's nothing special about it. But then the famous act to which you refer. He marries Donna Maria, who... She, soon after they are married, embarks on an affair with another local nobleman. We're talking about the Naples area, basically. He suspects this, Gesualdo. He says to his wife, "I'm going to go on a hunting trip. I'll be away from town for a few days. It's a trap." He returns home unexpectedly. As he thinks he will, he catches the lovers in flagrante delicto, as they say. And he kills them both in a terrible, brutal attack. He stabs,
it's very violent.
He stabs
it's
his wife
famously.
200 times. Yep. And he stabs the guy as well and shoots him. It's not, you know, we shouldn't make light of it because it is a terrible and bloody act that he does.
People do say, don't they, that it wasn't an act of kind of insanity, that he was heartbroken and acting out of his pain.
That's interesting. Apparently, and this is, again, not to excuse him, but it was not a nobleman in his position at the time finding this happening, it would have been almost accepted that that's how he'd respond. To kill her and her lover would have been almost the accepted way to deal with it.
Yeah, and until quite recently, that's the way it's kind of been spoken by historians. Almost, you know, well, that was how it was in those days.
I don't know if they still do. The French used to have crime passionnel, a crime of passion, as a defence.
Yep.
So you could get off murder for this. Which Gesualdo did, by the way, probably because of his noble status. He left the bodies in the courtyard for everyone to see as well, which it's a pretty terrible thing.
So he didn't try and cover up his crime then?
Not remotely. Not in any sense. The authorities came and investigated it, and he basically said, "Oh, this is all right." Because, you know, basically, what else can you expect this man to do, having found his wife doing this? He never got over it, we don't think. He was stricken with guilt, remorse, and mental illness for the rest of his life. But out of this comes this amazing music, because his music changes and his music becomes obsessed with sorrow. The same words that occur again and again in the madrigals are love, pain, regret, sorrow, death. But the music suddenly changes and it becomes, now you're more of an expert on the technicalities of music than me, chromatic, heavily chromatic. It starts to use...
Which is basically a whole other layer of feeling in music.
Right. And it becomes, the harmonies change, it becomes dissonant, the harmonies become much stranger. And you don't really get any music after Gesualdo that sounds like this for 400 years or for 300 years till Wagner comes along. He is a total one-off and a total pioneer. And if you hear the music, I suggest if you listen to Morolasso from the sixth book of Madrigals, I think it is, it sounds modern. Because the harmonies sound really strange and modern.
And more, it's slightly, it's quite lush as well, isn't it?
Lush, but drenched in this kind of anguish,
morose,
and heartache.
Yeah.
And with these strange, otherworldly harmonies. And it is beautiful. But he then disappears from view for a long time until the 20th century. His music is just regarded as too odd, you know. And several hundred years later, in the middle of the last century, a guy called Philip Heseltine, who is better known by his name, the pseudonym he took, Peter Warlock, British composer, best known, I guess, for the Capriole Suite, which is always on compilations you get in service stations of English music.
And he liked a party.
Well, he did.
There was very much a dark side to him.
He's a podcast of his own.
He
Peter
is,
Warlock,
for sure.
Dabbled in the occult, committed suicide, mentally troubled. Some people think he thought he was Gesualdo.
Okay.
He and a guy called Cecil Gray write a book about Gesualdo, which basically says, this dude is magnificent. You need to listen to his music. And they're slightly jokey about the murder, which is to our eyes and ears a little bit uncomfortable, I find now. They're slightly dismissive of the actual horror of the murder because we said Warlock liked to dabble in dark things himself. If you read Aldous Huxley's Doors of Perception, which is famously the book he reads when he writes about his mescaline adventures, he listens to a Mozart piano concerto on mescaline and goes, I can't stand this. It's too cold. It's too horrible. So he puts some Gesualdo on and basically enjoys the trip listening to Gesualdo.
Wow.
Peter Maxwell Davis was into him. Yep. Alfred Schnittke, the Russian composer, wrote an opera about him. One of the other things he's supposed to have done is killed one of his children. There's no proof for this, but people think Gesualdo killed one of his children by swinging the poor child around. And in Schnittke's opera based on this is really grisly, in Schnittke's opera based on this, one of the staging effects is that baby dolls are used, being swung around on ropes on stage, six of them.
Oh my God.
Which sounds pretty...
It's all very extreme, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which I can imagine would appeal to Warlock.
Yeah, Warlock was into him, Aldous Huxley was into him,
Schnittke
was into him.
Herzog's
made a documentary about him, which is really weird. Called Death for Five Voices.
As if it could be anything else, really.
It's really odd. You can get it on YouTube. It's a really odd Werner Herzog-y thing. Anna Calvi has said to Tully Enemy a few years ago, I'm really influenced by this guy, Gesualdo. And you can hear that kind of drama in that.
Which is incredible to think, really, that, you know, in over 400 years, he's still having this impact. It is quite rare of Renaissance composers, I think. What was it? Was he always just sort of there in the background until Warlock sort of brought him more to the foreground? Or did Warlock discover him somehow?
I think that Warlock and Cecil Gray book really did bring him back into, you know, I think he had drifted out of
did
the
world. Did they find him somewhere, though? Was he sort of still
around? Well, I think his music had
been
knocking around, but it just... It was so odd at the time that I think it was just regarded as a sort of oddity.
Slightly shelved, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was Warlock and Gray's book said, this guy's a genius. He, you know, he predated modern music 400 years before, which is extraordinary. And in later life, he became hugely troubled, Gesualdo. He never got over this thing, but continued to write. He didn't just write madrigals, but it's these spooky, weird madrigals that are what he's best known
haunting
for.
Isn't it the sound
haunting
of his music
is the word, yeah. And if you don't know it, go and listen to some. It's fabulous. I absolutely love it. Start with Moro Lasso from the fifth or sixth, I can't remember which now, book of madrigals, but both those late books of madrigals are gorgeous. You should say he didn't kind of get off scot-free, as it were. It was a scandal.
Yeah.
The whole of Italy, or that part of Italy, talked about it. And I think it was parodied in songs and things and in theatre.
It was probably almost as much a scandal, though, by the fact that she was with somebody else as that he killed her, you know.
This is a glib comparison, but I'm guessing it might have been like the O.J. Simpson of that period of Renaissance Naples, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he does get off, as it were.
And becomes the famous murderer.
The famous murderer who makes this shocking music. But he did also, Gesualdo, he certainly punished himself. He lived in a kind of exile in his castle from then on. He withdrew from society and just made this music in isolation. He married again. But, well, yeah.
Wow.
Cecil Gray.
That's not something you put on your Tinder profile, is it?
No. It's...
Stabbed ex-wife 200 times.
I know.
Lol.
Cecil Gray, who co-wrote this book with Warlock, he says his second wife must have been an extremely virtuous lady because he didn't murder her.
Yeah.
So, but he did lock himself away. He sort of into a kind of self-exile.
Maybe he was like, I've done that now. And it didn't go that well.
No.
And it's not made me feel that good.
No, he certainly didn't make him feel that good. I mean, we're not trying to excuse him, but he didn't put it behind him. He didn't bounce back. That's a good word.
Well, that's all for this week.
It is.
We'll be back with more curious tales from the world of music.
We don't know what
yet. Bet your bottom dollar.
You can bet your whatever your bottom dollar is, you can bet it. So until the next time, from me, Bert Dangerous.
And me, Pat Terrier.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Excellent.
Notable. The podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.